understanding of why is what makes it much harder and much more expensive. Just producing high-quality products and marketing them does not guarantee success. Authenticity cannot be achieved without clarity of why. And authenticity matters. Ask the best salesman what it takes to be a great salesman. They will always tell you that it helps when you really believe in the product you're selling. What does belief have to do with sales? Simple. When salesmen actually believe in the thing they are selling, then the words that come out of their mouth are authentic. When belief enters the equation, passion exudes from the salesman. It is the authenticity that produces the relationships upon which all the best sales organizations are based. Relationships also build trust, and with trust comes loyalty. Absent a balanced golden circle means no authenticity, which means no strong relationships, which means no trust. And you're back to square one, selling on price, service, quality, and features. You're back to being like everyone else. Worse, without that authenticity, companies will resort to manipulations. Pricing, promotions, fear, peer pressure, take your pick. Effective? Of course. But only for the short term. Being authentic is not a requirement for success. It is if you want success to be lasting, however. Again, it goes back to why. Authenticity is when you say and do the things you actually believe. But if you don't know why the organization or the products exist on a level beyond what you do, then it is impossible to know if the things you say or do are consistent with your why. Without why, any attempt at authenticity will almost always be inauthentic. The right order. After you have clarity of why, are disciplined and accountable to your own values and guiding principles, and are consistent in all you say and do, the final step is to keep it all in the right order. Just like that little Apple marketing example I used earlier, simply changing the order of the information, starting with why, changed the impact of the message. The what's are important. They provide the tangible proof of the why. But the why must come first. The why provides the context for everything else. As you will hear over and over in all the cases I use, whether in leadership, decision-making, or communication, starting with why has a profound and long-lasting impact on the result. Starting with why is what inspires people to act. If you don't know why, you can't know how. Rollin King, a San Antonio businessman, hatched the idea to take what Pacific Southwest was doing in California and bring it to Texas, to start an airline that flew short-haul flights between Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio. He had recently gone through a long and messy divorce and turned to the one man he trusted to help him get his idea off the ground, his wild turkey-drinking, chain-smoking divorce lawyer, Herb Kelleher. In nearly every way, King and Kelleher were opposites. King, a numbers guy, was notoriously gruff and awkward, while Kelleher was gregarious and likable. At first, Kelleher called King's idea a dumb one. But by the end of the evening, King had successfully inspired him with his vision, and Kelleher agreed to consider coming on board. It would take 4 years, however, before Southwest Airlines would make its first flight from Dallas's Love Field to Houston. Southwest did not invent the concept of a low-cost airline. Pacific Southwest Airlines pioneered the industry. Southwest even copied their name. Southwest had no first-mover's advantage. Braniff International Airways, Texas International Airlines, and Continental Airlines were already serving the Texas market. And none was eager to give up any ground. But Southwest was not built to be an airline. It was built to champion a cause. They just happened to use an airline to do it. In the early 1970s, only 15% of the traveling population traveled by air. At that rate, the market was small enough to scare off most would-be competitors to the big airlines. But Southwest wasn't interested in competing against everyone else for 15% of the traveling population. Southwest cared about the other 85%. Back then, if you had asked Southwest whom their competition was, they would have told you, "We compete against the car and the bus." But what they meant was, "We're the champion for the common man." That was why they started the airline. That was their cause, their purpose, their reason for existing. How they went about building their company was not a strategy developed by a high-priced management consultancy. It wasn't a collection of best practices that they saw other companies doing. Their guiding principles and values stemmed directly from their why and were more common sense than anything else. In the 1970s, air travel was expensive. And if Southwest was going to be the champion for the common man, they had to be cheap. It was an imperative. It was how they were going to bring their why to life. And in a day and age when air travel was elitist, back then people wore ties on planes. As the champion for the common man, Southwest had to be fun. That's how they had to do it. It was an imperative. And in a time where air travel was complicated, with different prices depending on when you booked, Southwest had to be simple. If they were to be accessible to the other 85% of the population, then simplicity was an imperative. At the time, Southwest had two price categories, nights and weekends, and daytime. That was it. Simple. Cheap, fun, and simple. That's how they did it. That's how they were to champion the cause of the common man. The result of their actions was made tangible in the things they said and the things they did. Their product, the people they hired, their culture, and their marketing. "You're now free to move about the country," they said in their advertising. That's much more than a tagline. It's a cause, and it's a cause looking for followers. Those who could relate to Southwest, those who saw themselves as average Joes, now had an alternative to the big airlines. They also had an alternative to the car or the bus. And those who believed what Southwest believed became fiercely loyal to the company. They felt Southwest was a company that spoke directly to them and directly for them. More importantly, they felt that flying Southwest said something about who they were as people. The loyalty that developed with their customers had nothing to do with price. Price was simply one of the ways the airline brought their cause to life. Howard Putnam, one of the former presidents of Southwest, likes to tell a story of a senior executive of a large company who approached him after an event. The executive said that he always flew one of the big airlines when he traveled on business. He had to. It was a company mandate. And although he had accumulated many frequent flyer miles on the other airline, and money was no object, when he flew for himself or with his family, he always chose Southwest. "He loves Southwest," Putnam says with a grin when he tells the story. "Just because Southwest is cheap doesn't mean it only appeals to those with less money. Cheap is just one of the things Southwest does that helps us understand what they believe. What Southwest has achieved is the stuff of business folklore. As a result of why they do what they do, and because they are highly disciplined in how they do it, they are the most profitable airline in history. There's never been a year that they didn't turn a profit, including after September 11th and during the oil crises of the 1970s and early 2000s. Everything Southwest says and does is authentic. Everything about them reflects the original cause King and Kelleher set out to champion decades earlier. It has never veered." Fast forward about 30 years. United Airlines and Delta Airlines looked at the success of Southwest and decided they needed a low-cost product to compete and share in Southwest's success. "We gotta get us one of those," they thought. In April 2003, Delta launched their